You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to episode 36 of our show, where we discuss the latest news about Apple, iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple Watch, Apple TV, and more. We're recording on Thursday, October 1st, 2015. Do you need a website? Why not do it yourself with Wix.com? No matter what business you're in, you can get your site live today. With hundreds of templates and easy drag-and-drop features, it's simple to customize and there's no coding needed. You don't need to be a programmer or designer to create something beautiful. Go to Wix.com and create your own stunning website. It's easy and free. With me today is our roaming vagabond, Dan Aaron Dilger. Hey, Dan.
Hi, from Portland, Oregon. That's where I'm at right now.
Welcome. Not nearly as exotic as some of the locations you've been recently.
Yeah, I've been traveling around.
Well, we're glad you're here today with us. And Mikey Campbell calling in from Honolulu.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys. This is interesting. We were talking about this a little bit before we began recording. Mikey, you've got numerous 6S, 6S Plus devices, and Dan, you've had the review unit. So can we just talk about this a little bit?
Sure thing.
What did you get, Mikey?
Me?
Yeah, you.
I got a 6S and a 6S Plus, and then another 6S for fun. That I'm going to return.
So you have two 6S's and a 6S Plus.
Yeah.
Why did you get the for fun device?
Just to make sure that I got one. It was that was my pre-order 6S. And it had a different shipping address than the other two that I ordered. So it was just a safety, a backup.
Right. So how did you acquire your other devices then?
I went through the checkout process again with a new address.
Oh, okay. So you didn't go and wait in line at an Apple store?
No.
You weren't at Ala Moana Mall waiting in line?
No, I did that last year for the last time, I think, hopefully.
Okay. And Dan, which devices do you have?
I have last year's 6 and 6 Plus, and then I have both the 6S and the 6S Plus.
All right. And let me ask, what device, Dan, do you think is going to be your primary device?
Well, last year I had both of them, and I was trying to give them equal time, and I had a really hard time picking up the 6 Plus just because it was so big. And I kept using the 6 thinking that at some point I would sync them up and try using the bigger phone, and I just never got around to it until I had the 6 stolen in Hong Kong, and that kind of forced me to use the 6 Plus. And I have hated using the big phone, but I can't stop using it. I now set up with the new S models. I have the 6S Plus that I'm using all the time, and I'm trying to give some, you know, specific time to the 6S, smaller one. And it's hard to go down. It's kind of a thing of once you get a certain expectation. The physical size of the bigger phone is annoying. It's difficult. I mean, it's not hard to put in your pocket, but when you're walking around and, you know, you're sitting in the park and it's kind of trying to squeeze out, you're on a roller coaster. it's just bigger, and the biggerness is a downside. But it's really difficult. Even though the smaller, the 4.7-inch S model, or the 6S, it's kind of the perfect size. It's almost a little bit too big. I have huge hands, but it's a little bit bigger than, you know, the classic iPhone 5 size. That makes it a little bit of a reach. It's not much of a reach for me, but the 6 Plus really pushes it beyond that. So it's kind of an irritation to try to reach the top. I find when I'm doing things like maps, when I'm trying to hit the top button, it doesn't always register. And I don't think to use reachability a lot, where you double tap the home button and pulls it down. It seems like kind of an extra step. So it's kind of a difficult struggle. But it's not enough to make me go down from the larger screen. It's so nice to be able to see things really clearly, and especially when you're taking pictures. And anytime you're looking at anything from the map to a web page, the extra screen real estate is great. So it's kind of where I am. I can't go down and I can't.
So you're conflicted, but you're staying with the large device.
Yes.
Hey, okay. Dan, have you found that the 3D touch kind of helps alleviate some of that largeness as far as say hyperlinks? You can kind of preview, you know, the peek and pop, you can preview them without clicking on them and having to swipe back or hit the back button.
Yeah, it's a new layer of navigation. I haven't really given a thought about making it easier to use a bigger phone. That's an interesting idea. There's certainly options, like you're saying, that there's certainly shortcuts you can take that you're not having to reach up as far. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, my hands are tiny. I have elf hands, so take what I can get. And I've found that with the 6S Plus, I've been using 3D Touch a lot just to preview things instead of actually diving into them. Like, you know, for example, if I was on AI's website or a homepage and then I wanted to, you know, check out an article earlier in the day, the 6 Plus, I would go in, tap the hyperlink, and then have to swipe back. Whereas with the 6S Plus, I can just use the peek mode and read it on screen and release my finger, and I'm still on the homepage.
I haven't noticed it so much with peek and pop, but the quick actions on home icons are like that for me. For example, when you do, a lot of times when you open maps, what you're really wanting to do is search for something. So when you do a deep action and quick action, if you do search nearby when you launch maps, then the cursor's already in the top mini bar. You don't have to open maps and then reach your thumb up to the top of the screen to hit that target. And it's the same thing with camera. If you want to do a selfie, instead of opening the camera and reaching to the very top to turn the camera around, you can just do that quick action where you press and say, take a selfie, and you're already in selfie mode.
Yeah, right. You know what kind of irritates me? I mean, it's going to be fixed, obviously, as the months pass and developers, you know, update their apps to support 3D touch. But what kind of irritates me now is that a lot of devs haven't updated yet. And I find myself not so much afraid of trying to use 3D touch, but when you use it in, for say on the home screen and it's not supported, the quick action is not supported, it'll give you that haptic feedback, right? Whereas if you're in the app and it's not supported, it won't give you that the triple tap to tell you that the phone did register 3D touch, but it's just not supported in that specific UI. So you kind of have like this...
you're sort of lost in a did it not work kind of
stuff. Yeah, yeah. Whereas like on watch, it's kind of system-wide thing with force touch, right? I mean, if you try to force touch somewhere that it's not supported, you'll get the haptic and you'll get the visual and in some cases audio. Whereas on iPhone, it's not like that. Only quick actions is that supported. And then when you go into an app and 3D touch is not supported, it won't give you that feedback to tell you that it's, you know, it's not yet enabled yet.
So that's kind of a misstep by Apple.
I don't know. I mean, it's a different... iOS apps are built differently than the watch apps, right? I mean, they're the legacy iOS apps obviously won't have support for 3D touch, whereas the Apple Watch apps, to get on the Apple Watch, you're going to have to meet that criteria, so it does support force touch, even if, you know,
it... Well, force touch is also a very consistent thing where it's basically you press hard on the watch and it pops up another layer of buttons that wouldn't otherwise fit on the screen. Where with 3D touch, it's consistent on the home page. So when you're in, when you're looking at icons, every icon that you hit does something. It either does something useful, like most most of Apple's apps, there's some that don't do anything. You know, calculator's not going to do anything. There's an increasing number of third-party apps like Twitter or something that pop up something, whether it's useful or not. But if you have an app that doesn't do anything, you get this kind of feedback. However, but if you had that going all the time, most of your environment is either, you know, you're looking at a web page or text field, like notes or something like that, and there's currently nothing that triggers when you do a deep press, and so nothing happens. So if you just had some sort of default, you know, bump, bump, nothing's happening, then you'd be running into that a lot when you're trying to just select text or something, I think. Whereas having nothing happen means that something only happens when there's something that can happen. So when you hit a document or a photo or a URL or something like that, it actually does something where you don't really have a target. Yeah. You don't need to have...
Yeah, I guess it would get kind of clunky if it was always vibrating.
Okay, so I want to ask. You guys are clearly sticking with the 6S or the 6S Plus. You're sticking with the Plus size, Dan, but begrudgingly. Mikey, which device are you sticking with?
I'm not totally certain yet. I mean, I do, like Dan, appreciate the gargantuan screen size. It's really nice to look at, especially browsing the web. It's way better than the 4.7 inch version. I mean, anything bigger is better for the web. But then again, I mean, pocketability and just overall usage, like every day, like if I'm texting while, you know, walking or something, with the 6S Plus, I'd have to look at the screen or look at my phone to make sure I'm not going to drop it because I'm balancing it on my fingers. Whereas in, you know, the 6S, I'll have it securely grasped in my hand. So I'm not really sure. The jury's out.
I have a solution for that problem, and I'll tell you about it after the show. But what I want to ask, I mean, we know this was a huge launch, right? They sold 13 million units in the first 3 days. There's no question that this was a good launch for Apple, right?
Or was it?
Well, go on.
No,
opened that door. Go on.
I mean, yeah, people are, I mean, the pundits are saying, of course, you know, with China being one of the launch day countries, it clouds the fact that the mix, we don't know the exact mix. But on the other hand, China did sell out of its launch day supply, just like the US and Europe. So in that respect, it is capped and it met or exceeded Apple's expectations. So any way you look at it, it's a good launch. The numbers are there, whether it was because of China or not, it was a record.
And if you look at previous launches, every year it's been this thing where the, you know, holiday launch Q1 is this huge surge and then it sort of goes down and it sort of goes down. iPhone 6 wasn't like that. iPhone 6 was a huge surge. And in a large part because China didn't launch it until later, mainland China, you had this huge second surge in the January, February, March quarter. And then it stayed high. And it stayed high again. And so everybody's saying, oh, I don't know if the 6S is going to match that. And it's like, I don't think you noticed. It's not this typical huge surge and then drop off waiting for another exciting phone. It's a huge demand that's broad and sustained. And that's just going to segue into here's a nicer phone. And then the 6 is now cheaper. So you're going to have two groups of people that are buying. One that was, you know, more worried about the cost, and the other that wants the latest, greatest thing. So you're going to have two, you know, mini surges that are going to keep going here. To have people say that these pundits that are like, oh, I don't know if the 6 is going to be able to match, or the 6S is going to be able to match the 6, what a silly thing to even suggest. And we have indication that things are slowing down.
Yeah, what I think analysts are going to have to start recognizing, especially with Apple's upgrade plan, is not so much focusing on the new device sales on a launch, but how when a new phone launches, what that does to you know, back channel and older models, because I mean that's going to become a much more relevant avenue of profit for Apple in the coming years. With, you know, I mean even carriers are pushing they're kind of laying off the subsidies, so people are kind of forced to go with the older phones if they, I mean, old, it's a year old. I mean, you know, last year's model. So they're gonna have to start building that into their own, you know, analysis.
Right. Contracts are going away. Currently, I'm under a Verizon contract for one more year, but after that, they're willing, won't even be willing to offer me a contract. It'll be pay by month for whatever.
And with the increase in these kind of leasing programs that both Apple and the carriers are doing in the West and have been doing other places, you're going to have a lot of secondhand phones, and I don't see a lot of secondhand sales, which right. kind of suggests that Apple is shipping those to other countries. And whenever I see a bunch of new things happening, you think, what's going to happen to this stuff after a period of time? Like, I was just in Dubai, and you're seeing all these buildings that are being created, and, you know, they're all brand new for now, but it's like, when you have scale happening that fast, what happens in 10 or 20 years when these buildings are old? And they were thrown up, they're poorly built. The same thing in China. There's all this stuff that's just rapidly being thrown up. It's not maintained. It's not done very well. What happens when it starts to get old? It's not classic. It looks like the 90s. It's going to be awful. And kind of thinking about that in terms of iPhones, you have all these brand new phones, millions of phones that are shipping every weekend. What happens to the old phones? And some of them trailed off. It used to be that Apple's growth was so tremendously fast that the older generations almost didn't matter because the new generation was growing so much faster. But now we have a situation where there's tons of new, there's more new phones, new iPhones being sold than ever. And yet we know that at some point, you know, you're going to reach saturation. What happens, how do you sustain growth? And I think one of the things is Apple's going to have phones that are a year or 2 years old that are still, you know, really good phones that they can sell in other markets. And that includes, right. you know, markets like India, where right, that are right. currently being targeted by Samsung and other companies with sort of lower and cheaper phones that aren't that good. Mm-hmm. And they're certainly not as good as a, you know, year or 2 year old iPhone. So I think that's going to be a big opportunity for growth going forward.
Another Sadly, thing, they're not getting any phones from me because I, do you keep all your phones down?
Just hoard them. I don't, I have an Apple Museum that I drag around.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, no.
I'm really bad at selling things, and I'm sort of a hoarder. I think at some point I just need to find a space where I can display all this stuff and start charging admission.
Nice.
Well, you remember Jobs donated all the old stuff to Stanford. There's no reason that you need to haul it around, too.
They have, yeah, they have the Computer Museum in, what's that, San Jose?
Yeah.
But then you have to go to San Jose to see it.
Oh,
ugh. Another
well,
thing.
I have an original iPhone somewhere. It's gone missing. I have a couple of iPhone 3Gs hanging around, and other than that, I have sold through all of my old devices. I know I do have an Apple TV Model 1 around as well.
I've given away a lot of my phones to friends and stuff, but yeah, I have a lot of. I still have the original G5 Power Mac. That
cool
with a huge screen that
I have my first G4 Power Mac.
It's not fun to carry around, but I do it anyway. But talking about China, so one other thing, Mikey mentioned in China, you know, one of the things they said was, oh yeah, it's 30% more sales, but that includes China. And one thing that nobody that I've noticed that nobody's observed is Apple was blocking sales of what do you call them, scalper type sales, where they just send a bunch of people into stores. And they're really cracking down on that.
Right. They were limiting the amount of phones that a person can buy at a time.
Right. And you have to reserve it in a lot of countries. You can't just like walk in and say, hey, I want to, you know, however many phones you'll sell me. And then I'm going to come back tomorrow and do it again. You have to actually create a reservation so that Apple's sort of tracking what you're doing. That has all been kiboshed. So there's this huge channel of back industry. And when I was in Hong Kong and going into China, you see there's a huge market for smuggling stuff into the country. There's all kinds of mainland people that come into particularly Hong Kong and get stuff and bring it back through to resell it at a big markup. So part of the initial surge that we've seen in previous years has involved that kind of black marketing of stuff. So that's missing, and that's kind of a significant thing. I mean, that's the kind of thing that hits the first couple of days during the launch, is a lot of those sales are being, you know, packed up to sell somewhere else. And it also, you see a lot of it in the U.S. in San Francisco and in New York and other international cities, there's a lot of people that come from other places to buy inventory. And so with Apple cracking down on that, there's less of a kind of packing the inventory of the black market sales and more actual real people, organic sales of people actually buying it. So the idea that there isn't really growth is, I don't think that's true at all.
We were talking a little bit about 3D Touch at the beginning. What are the best 3D Touch apps for your phone? Mikey, what are the best apps that you found that support 3D Touch?
I mean, right now, it's obviously any of Apple's first-party apps. I use it a lot in Mail. I use it a lot in Safari. Where else do I use it? I don't really use it that often in the third-party apps that support it. Do you, Dan?
I haven't used a lot of third-party apps that I've seen have a tremendous use for it. Right now, I think it's really been out for a few days. And so I think most of the developer support for it is just kind of throwing it on their homepage icon, putting a quick action, which is quite easy to do. And I think we'll see more interesting things roll out later. There are a couple things that don't get mentioned so much. For example, when you're in camera, when you do hard press on the photo icon that you'd use to jump into photos, you can actually scroll through your photos and preview them. And then when you let go, you're back into the camera. So it's like little things like that that let you jump between apps. That's actually a useful, fast navigation trick that you can do that you couldn't really do otherwise.
Right, you can preview the photos that you've taken without actually leaving the camera context, is
right.
What you're telling me. So, Dan, Mikey, let me ask. El Capitan came out yesterday. Have you guys installed it yet?
I've been running the beta versions. I did not install the shipping version, but I did install the GM.
Okay, but there is a difference between the GM and the one that actually was released to the public. So you may want to install the...
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance, though.
Okay. Dan, are you running El Capitan?
So I have been running betas on a separate machine that I don't use on a daily basis, but I've been working on it. When it came out, I only have mobile service right now on my T-Mobile phone. So I packed up my computer and ran down to the Apple Store thinking I would get blazing fast Wi-Fi, and set it up to download the new OS, and it said it would take 6 hours. And I left it there for a while, and I was like doing things, and it made very little progress in an unreasonable amount of time. So I thought, well, I'll do this later. And then I came home, and I thought maybe I should just see. I have an extra phone, so I switched to T-Mobile, and they give you tremendous amounts of data.
Well, especially if you have two lines, right?
So I have an extra phone that I could use, and I thought, well, sure, I'll just do it. And it sucked it up in half an hour, this huge OS update. I think 6 gigs.
Right, it also ate, like, you've got 4 gigs remaining on that line now.
Yeah, probably. Well, it's okay. the other thing I want to say about T-Mobile is I switched it over right before I was in Europe, and amazing.
Simple
every,
global work
every
for you?
Country I went to, except for, I flew over Turkey, and I got a text message because I left my phone on, and the plane didn't crash. But I did get a text message saying that Turkey wasn't one of the countries. But everywhere else, every country I went into, you cross a border, and it says, hello, welcome to this country. You have free T-Mobile. And it's 3G data, so it isn't blindingly fast. I think you can pay more for 4G data. I didn't look into that. But wow, when you're traveling, it's so nice to be able to step off a plane and be able to do everything and search for things and have maps. And wow, it was amazing. And it's included. It's free. And T-Mobile is cheaper. The only thing is that T-Mobile doesn't really work very well as a carrier in the U.S., as a phone carrier. Like every phone call I get, I answer it and it hangs up. Ooh. And either all my phones are rude or all my friends are rude.
Your friends are rude, but yeah, you probably should report that.
Yeah, so I don't really get amazing phone service, but wow, when you're not in the country, it sure is amazing. And very the data cool. service is actually pretty good. It's a little flaky. Traveling in Northwest California and up the 5, there were a couple places where I had no service whatsoever. But in most cities, you get pretty fast service.
Nice. Well, I installed El Capitan yesterday. I have not been running the betas. I ran all the betas for Yosemite, and I decided this was my time to just stay with stable OSs. And so I installed El Cap yesterday, and it has been smooth sailing for me. I've seen some people that have had problems with things like networking and network consumption. But for the most part, my biggest issue, the only issue I had, was on one machine, it didn't want to install at first until I'd done a reboot, and then it allowed me to install. And the other one was, but that one was brilliant because it said, we can't install on Macintosh HD. No reason why. No actual error message other than just, we can't, go home. And I'm like, Apple, can't you give me a better reason than we just simply can't? So I rebooted the machine, and then the install worked there. I use AirDrop, and I know everyone complains about AirDrop, but I like sending photos from my phone to my computer via AirDrop, and I like using Handoff. And the first time that I used AirDrop, it took about 5 minutes for the computer to recognize that a file was coming over from the phone. But after that, it's been so fast. It's been lightning. And I've been really pleased with El Capitan.
I need to get a new MacBook because mine's getting pretty slow. And also, it's just old enough to where it doesn't really support continuity stuff.
How old is it?
2011.
Okay.
So it sort of does. There's a few things that sort of work, but AirDrop doesn't. AirDrop only works between Macs, I think.
No, I had AirDrop working with a 2011 MacBook Air for a while.
I thought there was. I dinked with it for a minute, and I thought I had it working,
It should totally work. It should be there.
Yeah.
I would suggest that you do a clean install of El Capitan to an external drive, and see if it doesn't work. And if it doesn't, then there's your answer. But my expectation is it should on 2011 because it's got Bluetooth Low Energy in there.
It does, but I think there's something else that is not supported. But just in general, I need a new Mac, and I'm trying to decide if I want to get the super light thin MacBook, new thing, or a more pro model that would be faster.
Yeah.
For a variety of things. So.
I don't know. You travel a lot. I would.
Yeah, light when you're traveling is a big deal.
Yeah.
But the MacBook is not a desktop computer, so I may have to get a Retina iMac with it. I'm also pretty stoked about the new iPad Pro.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of interest. We're looking at the videos that we did at the event, and the biggest number of views on YouTube by quite a wide margin was the ones on the iPad Pro.
I would like to see if you could use an iPad Pro as a primary machine.
It's pretty fast.
You say this every time a new iPad comes out.
I've been thinking about doing this since 2010, and I'm still ready. I'm the person that doesn't own any iPad at all right now, so I've got nothing else to do but ask Dan to take the fall for me.
Oh, Dan.
It is an interesting form factor. It's kind of a sort of a new segment. It's things that other people have sort of tried, but no one's really pulled it off.
How did the speakers sound?
Well, where I used it, it wasn't easy to get a good sense of that.
Yeah, in the demo hall, when everyone else around you is talking and filing reports, it's not really conducive to jacking up the speakers.
How dare you! They are superb.
They are. They are sublime. They are sublime for playing sublime. Today's episode is brought to you by the incorporation experts at Biz Filings. For a job done right, you've got to go to the experts. And when it comes to incorporation, that means bizfilings.com. There, the process is clearly laid out for you with a step-by-step guidance from on-demand professionals. Incorporation can bring you savings, protections, and growth, so don't just do it on any old website. BizFilings has been at it for nearly 20 years, founded by entrepreneurs who set out to create the kind of experience they'd want if they had to do it all over again. Straightforward information, clarifying tools, and instant access to experts via email, phone, or chat. You may not have incorporation all figured out just yet, but a quick visit to BizFilings is a step in the right direction. Go to bizfilings.com/start for a free guide to get a clear line of sight into your incorporation. That's bizfilings.com/start. So the Apple Music trial is up. We had 3 months of free Apple Music, and now it's going away. So let me ask, are you guys subscribing? Did you guys really take advantage of Apple Music? How did you use it when you had it?
I was traveling during much of that period, so I didn't use it extensively. My friends that I was traveling with used it a lot and likes it. I really like being able to, when you're thinking of a song, just pull it up and it's there. So that was really cool. And being able to access videos, I really like videos. And yes, I automatically subscribe because I got a letter from Tim Cook saying, you've already paid. We billed your credit card. So yeah, I'm a subscriber.
So you haven't managed your subscription to turn that off? You've just kind of gone with it?
I really don't do that with any service that I subscribe to. I'm paying for Hulu and Netflix, and I'm kind of, anytime I subscribe to anything, I Beef of the Month Club, they just keep piling up my doorstep.
Until you move, of course.
Yeah, I'm a very bad shopper.
Dan, I've got a subscription that I'd like to go ahead and sell you. I'll tell you about it after the show. And
I'm kind of a sucker for anything that...
That's fantastic. I'm going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, everybody does.
Mikey, are you listening to Apple Music?
I am. I'm still debating whether to keep. I mean, I also got billed yesterday. Got a nice email. But so far I'm finding it on par with Spotify. Spotify, as far as content goes, there's not much that Apple Music or Spotify has over the other, and I can find what I want to on both.
So if you can find what you want to on both, what's it going to take to get you to stick with one?
Well, it doesn't hurt that Apple's is built into the OS, so that helps. Searching, Spotlight, all that integration.
Okay.
Helps a lot.
So it's coming down to the integration and the accessibility to finding what you want wins out over the other service. So you're probably going to stick with Apple Music instead of Spotify. Is that correct?
I'm probably going to stick with both because...
Because you're made of money and who cares?
Yes. I subscribe to all the services. Well, I mean, I think that it's my... It's kind of a...
It's your patriotic duty as an American.
No, I mean, there are things that I might need to write about, and having a subscription will keep me in the loop, so to speak.
Okay, but absent your job as a writer, which one would you choose personally? You wouldn't simply splash out for all of the things because...
I don't know. I really dislike Apple Music's UI. Spotify is, to me, much cleaner and easier to navigate than the hidden pop-up menus that Apple Music relies on. So if it wasn't built into the OS and all things were equal, I would probably choose Spotify.
Interesting. Well, although
they are compelling, and the exclusives.
And have you looked at any of the exclusives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, I can wait a couple weeks until it comes out on another service.
Okay. Well, I'm not subscribing. The first thing I did when I agreed to the trial was manage my subscriptions to tell it to not automatically renew. And I chose that because I don't like paying any of these subscription services. I'm not a fan of paying for Spotify. I'm not a fan of paying for Pandora. I don't pay Apple Music. And I'm just not convinced what any of them can do to get me to become a subscriber.
I bet you want your internet news for free, too. No ads, huh?
You goddamn right.
What do you think about the inevitable Apple TV subscription? You think that's going to happen?
It's entirely possible, and it may be more attractive. You know, we do pay for Netflix, we do pay for Hulu, and we sprung for the Hulu with no advertisements, which, to be honest, is quite nice.
And yeah, I'm kind of bummed that I paid for Hulu, and you're sitting there watching the stuff you paid for, and it's like, here's another ad, here's another ad, here's another ad.
Right.
And it's the same ad over and over again. You watch a series of episodic
three
television.
Ads across 45 minutes,
really?
Yeah.
Do I have to watch this ad again? Can you show me another one?
Well, no. No, we cannot, Dan. You're going to have to see the same advertisement
again.
I
want to see different ads if I have
for
to watch
the next
ads.
45 minutes, yes. No, I went up to the $12 a month to get rid of the ads, and I'm glad that I did. You know, we don't have pay TV, so I've pretty much excised commercials from my daughter's experience of watching any televised material, and I'm happy about that.
I never thought of that.
What would it be like to grow out with any kind of commercials at all?
I know, and it'd be amazing, right?
That's the way I've raised them. They have never experienced a commercial unless they're at someone else's house or for a while they were watching Hulu, but now that's excised, so it's completely advertisement free.
I'm waiting for the Microsoft technology where you stand up and you say McDonald's.
Oh yes, that patent. That was brilliant. Stand up and shout McDonald's for your show to continue.
Cheeseburger. Please. Please, TV gods, let me see some more football.
Yeah.
Of course.
if and when there's an Apple TV subscription, if it offers the things that we care about to see, then it's entirely possible, especially if it's price competitive. You know, it could take Hulu out of competing for us and give us an Apple subscription. We'd totally do it. The original argument that I made when we cut cable, for 3 months, I went back and forth with my wife. And every night we'd look at that time we were using TiVo and we had cable. And I'd look at the guide and I'd say, well, there's a Law and Order episode on. And she'd be like, nah, I've seen them. And we'd turn the TV off. And every night for 3 months, we looked at each other and said, there's nothing we actually care to see on. And after 3 months, I said, can we please stop paying for this? And we finally cut it. And my big pitch was we can get an Apple TV and we can buy the seasons that we actually care about. And that was the argument. We bought an Apple TV and we never actually did that. We never actually once subscribed to a season of television through Apple TV because Netflix was there and it just sort of worked. So it's going to come down to what an Apple TV service provides that makes us buy in.
I have a really hard time. It's like I was saying, it's much easier for me to pay for a subscription, whether I use it or not, than to pay for a la carte stuff. So when I'm on iTunes, I think, do I want to pay for this show? And it's like 99 cents. I don't know if I want to pay that. That's a lot of money.
$3.99 for a movie. I mean,
and then I'll spend months and months where I'm not watching any television at all, but I'm paying, you know, Netflix and Hulu both $8 or $9 or whatever for a month. I'm that's something, you know, like $20 a month. I could have spent $60 on the things I actually wanted to watch. So I think if Apple had sort of a way to offer a subscription that gave you a certain, even if it wasn't completely unlimited, if you had like tiers that was sort of priced in the way that mobile data is. Mm-hmm. So you say, I'm paying you this much for watching TV occasionally.
I mean, that winds into overages where you've reached your limit just as you're watching something.
Yeah, but I could see saying like, okay, I've watched a lot of TV this month. I want to watch this other show too. And you pay like an extra 99 cents for that show.
Hmm.
But just if it was just like sort of a bundle as opposed to, because there's kind of a threshold. It's kind of hard to start.
I do like that all you can eat nature of things, though. That all you can eat nature of it is convenient. Because
yeah, but there's some people that can eat more than I can. I don't want to pay as much for television as somebody who just sits and watches TV all day long.
You're paying $240 a year.
Well,
that's not a huge amount compared to previous cable packages. That's not a huge amount.
Oh, you
on
mean
its
for?
Own. I mean, you're for what you're paying for your Netflix and your Hulu. You're nominally paying. Say it's
yeah, 20, but there's a lot that isn't on Netflix or Hulu.
Yes, that's true, and I simply don't care anymore.
Yeah.
If it's not on either of those things, I give zero. I just don't care.
Yeah, I don't watch enough to where I have a huge demand for something that's not on there, but I would like to have something where I could watch anything that I want as opposed to being forced to watch sort of second-rate stuff. I apparently also pay for, I pay for Amazon Prime, but whenever I look at Amazon Prime, I can't do it on Apple TV.
A ton of people don't pay for Amazon Prime and don't use it for instant video, though. That's kind of the exception. I think that's why we saw the
Netflix
news today.
Look broad and varied, yes.
Right. That's why we saw the news saying that Amazon is going to start disallowing sales of Apple streaming and Google streaming devices on Amazon.com. Is they're trying to figure out ways to bolster and push sales of Fire TV and Amazon instant video use.
Apple makes it look so easy to roll out stuff and have people buy it. It must be so frustrating for Google and Microsoft and Amazon. They keep rolling out the stuff and nobody buys it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Google rolled out the Chromecast and Chromecast Audio the other day, and it prompted me to dig out my old last year's Chromecast. I had to search for 2 days to find it, if you can believe. And I updated the software on that. It took 6 reboots to get it to actually update. And It functions. I don't know why I'd need to go buy the new one, to be honest. I'm not even sure what benefit I would derive from doing the new device compared to the one that updated.
Yeah, and that's supposed to be this terribly successful device that, you know, cost $35. They did not make money on it.
They were clearing them out at Target the other day just to make room for the new one to come in. So that's the verdict. I'm not subscribing to Apple Music. You guys are by virtue of continuing to subscribe to it. I want to talk about SoftLayer. SoftLayer develops a cloud built for innovation. Your business, your applications, your computational workloads are unique, so you deserve cloud resources that meet your needs. And SoftLayer is one of the only cloud providers that provisions dedicated servers and virtual servers from a single seamless platform on demand, connected to the same open API, and all connected to the same global private network. SoftLayer is an IBM company, and IBM uses SoftLayer as its cloud infrastructure foundation for all of IBM's cloud products and services. All of our listeners have the opportunity to get $500 of cloud infrastructure by visiting softlayer.com/podcast with a capital P. You can order bare metal servers, you can order virtual servers, and security services from your choice of data center from across 24 data centers around the world. You can automate and control your cloud infrastructure with a granular API or in the easy-to-use SoftLayer customer portal. Visit softlayer.com/podcast with a capital P to get started with your $500 off servers, storage, network, and security on a cloud built for innovation from SoftLayer. Movie news. Aaron Sorkin, Tim Cook, and the Steve Jobs film. So we had an article that went up about Aaron Sorkin apologizing for remarks that he made about Tim Cook. What's this going back and forth between Sorkin and Tim?
Free publicity for Sorkin.
Free publicity for Sorkin for Aaron and his movie, but what was the tiff about?
Tim Cook went on Late Night with Stephen Colbert, and the conversation got around to Steve Jobs and all of these, you know, the movies and documentaries and books about it, and Cook made a comment about how he feels some of them are being opportunistic in their endeavors, slightly directed at Sorkin, but not directly.
Could have been directed at any one of them, right?
Yeah, I mean the way Colbert asked specifically about the Steve Jobs movie, but I think Cook was speaking more in general terms, and Sorkin, I guess, saw or felt that he was slighted in some way and made a remark about how Tim Cook shouldn't, he's calling the kettle black. He made mention of Foxconn and worker wages. And
So the quote that was is, if you've got a factory full of children in China assembling phones for 17 cents an hour, you got a lot of nerve calling someone else opportunistic.
Right.
Right.
Which is funny coming from, I'm not going to get it, but I mean, you know,
First of all, there aren't children assembling phones for 17 cents an hour.
Yes.
First of all, that doesn't happen. What happens is there are workers, and Apple has a rigorous program of inspecting factories and making sure that they comply with all the rules, and that they actually have programs to help people get degrees to get education in the factory so that factory workers can better themselves, not just move up to assembling the next best thing on the factory line.
Yeah, but I mean, we can't – there are worker – there are some egregious things going on in China that, you know, can't be overlooked or can't be – Apple cannot be blamed for everything that
there may be egregious things going in China, but are they things that are egregious going on in Apple's factories? Clearly, Apple makes a lot of effort to make that not be the case.
I don't think it's 100% everywhere. I mean, even in their report, it's not 100% that, you know, every single factory is complying with their rules, and they do try. They do give a valiant effort in trying to weed those suppliers out, but at the same time, worker standards there are not nowhere near what they are in the U.S., for example.
Okay.
But then again, I mean, is it Apple's responsibility to export U.S. socioeconomic policy to other countries? I don't know. But I just don't. I think Sorkin's comments were off base. And
so, how did Sorkin back out of this? What was his big answer after going, you know, two barrels wide open on the?
He just said that both parties went too far. Speaking for
Cook. So he's kind of apologizing for Tim Cook on his behalf.
Yeah.
Yes.
But even the comments that he made, I mean, what he said was sort of dramatically inflated fiction. And that's kind of the same thing as it's a movie. You know, there's elements that the names, some of the names are the same, but you know, if you know any of his people, the kind of the way that he like over dramatizes things, that's what Hollywood does. Is they, you know, they take names and they create a story around them that's dramatic and exciting and tear jerking and whatever. And it's not really real. And when I see these movies about Steve Jobs, I wish they would just call them something like Citizen Kane. Because, you know, they could make sort of a caricature of a general group of people that are sort of like, you know.
It's not a movie about Hearst. It's about Kane.
Yeah. And, you know, they could have done that without saying, this is Steve Jobs, and here, you know, it's actually fiction. And it's Steve Jobs saying about a lot of things that Steve Jobs didn't say. And I have presenting no things in sort of a whack.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've no problem with these, with movies like Kutcher's movie and the upcoming Sorkin movie. Because they're clearly labeled as works of fiction based on events, right? I mean, it's not.
Yeah, but when people watch that, they think that they're watching a documentary. I mean, maybe they know in general that, yeah, it's kind of dramatized in parts, but there's a lot of times, especially, you know, kids see a movie.
That's history. I saw it on the movie.
Yeah, it's like that's their sense of what actually happened is when you watch movies about, you know, the Civil War or anything, and they're presenting something that's just completely not true. People think that that's what happened. And so I think if you're writing stuff, you have somewhat of a responsibility to, you know, clearly delineate that you're writing about something that happened in Silicon Valley, not a specific person that you're, you know, just dramatizing to the point where it's, you know, not really even true at all.
Right. Viewers also have a responsibility to take it, you know, upon themselves to research these things for them. You know.
Now I know you're crazy. Viewers don't have any responsibility. The viewer's responsibility begins and ends with, I paid some money for a movie ticket and I'm going to go enjoy this thing. That's where they have no responsibility to check the accuracy of what's being presented to them. Come on.
We live in a sad world. But
are you kidding me?
I have more of an issue with the quote-unquote documentaries that parade themselves as being objectionable and, you know,
The objective documentary with my strong bias as a filmmaker.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a slant to them, and I think they...
Well, so when you make a documentary, you have to tell some kind of story, and you have to decide what story the story is you're going to tell and how you arrange your pieces of footage to tell that story. It's documentary because you're not shooting fiction, you're not shooting actors, you're not shooting recreation unless you blatantly say... this was a reenactment, but it's still very much the director and the editor's viewpoint that's coming across, right? It's a documentary it's not journalism and it's not cinema verite where we're simply going to start the cameras rolling and we're going to capture everything in consecutive order. No, it's simply, here's my opinion, and I'm using footage not made by actors to show you what I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a documentary is. So it's also not the one truth, it's that director's truth.
Yeah, there's a thin line between documenting and propaganda, where you're saying, here's something I want everyone to think, and I'm pushing it out there so that everyone has some evidence supporting my opinion.
I'm trying to think of a documentary that hasn't been propaganda in some form, and I'm having trouble.
Well, I mean, there's varying degrees of how
Ken Burns. Ken Burns on his series on jazz.
I'll give Ken Burns to you. Mm-hmm.
Although his Civil War series was a bit one-sided.
Well, the Civil War was kind of one-sided.
I'm gonna leave that hanging there because I don't want to get into what side you want better represented.
Do you
want
to get into
No.
Sure. All right.
We can go into what side of the Civil War you wish had been better represented and represented more fairly later, but not on this show. So, Mikey, normally we go to Neil for cameras and things like this, especially with GoPro, but you've got a GoPro session. Tell me about the GoPro.
I've been testing it for a couple weeks. It's a neat little camera, but I don't see much right now in this current generation of hardware that makes it appealing, especially at the price point. I mean, for the same price, you can get better specs.
All right, hold on. So there was a price cut on the session. Tell me, what is the price right now?
I don't know. What is the price? You tell me.
Okay, if we're going to do that. The Hero 4 session got price reduced to $300. It was $400 and is now reduced to $300. And they simultaneously launched a $200 Hero Plus camera.
Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, $300 is a better price point for it. But for what it offers, it still falls a little short of the standard format GoPro Heroes.
Right. So the Session, for our listeners, is a camera unit without the traditional GoPro form factor. So the screen has been hacked off. It's basically shrunk down to be a cube of a camera, basically. It's extremely compact,
mm-hmm.
and it's waterproof, apparently.
Yeah.
Where everything else from the GoPro line requires a waterproofing case that you encase the camera into. So
right.
If you're in a water environment and you need the small camera and you don't care about the screen, then this makes sense, right?
Right. It's good for people who already own other Hero cameras, as perhaps a B-roll camera or maybe something you just want to have on your body at all times. But if you're getting a GoPro, as this isn't going to be the one that you should get first, I think.
Okay, so what do you recommend our listeners get first?
The Hero 4 Silver is good, a good start.
Okay. What about the Hero Plus, $200? It's a nice, easy entry price point.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. If you don't care about the screen, then, I mean, definitely go with that. But the Silver is a pretty great all-around shooter, and it comes with a screen that people are familiar with, whereas the others, you know, you kind of just point and pray that you grab the shot.
Yeah. So let me ask, what are the things that someone should look for in an action camera? Because there's GoPro, and there are all these other ones out there, and everyone chooses GoPro because they're the biggest and the best at it, right? Supposedly. Mm-hmm. But what do you think? Tell our listener what they should value and how they should decide which camera to get. What should the priorities be based on?
Well, I mean, beyond hardware, hardware specifications wise, the cameras out there are very similar. Format is a big consideration. The GoPro for some people might be a little unwieldy because of, I mean, it's kind of a boxy design, you know, with the, it's kind of difficult to hold in your hand, but it does have the widest variety of mounts. So, I mean,
there's the head mount and there's the chest mount.
And there's all sorts of third-party sticks and
bike mounts and
yeah, I mean there's all kinds of stuff out there for the GoPro. It's the most supported. It's like the iPhone of action cameras, right? I mean, it created like this cottage industry of accessories based around their mount. So if you don't like the GoPro and you're looking for another kind of action camera, I would just focus on basically optics is one of the main things that is a drawback for these smaller cameras. The GoPro has decent optics, has a good sensor, and it has good firmware to back it up. So what you want to look at is what kind of lens is being used, if it's going to be a fisheye, whether it has software to correct that, what kind of internal hardware it's running as far as the chip goes doesn't really concern you. Processor speed and stuff, because they're all basically the same and comparably spec'd in that regard.
Okay, so if you were recommending the camera, you're going to recommend someone get the Silver, is that right?
What's that?
If you're recommending a camera to someone, you're going to tell them to go get the GoPro Hero Silver.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the market for, I mean, it's still pricey, it's $400. It's a good. It's a very solid entry. Their cheaper one is also, it's a good starter camera. I mean, if you just want to go out, take some footage of you surfing or whatever, the entry model is a good place to start.
Cool. Dan, have you ever shot anything with a GoPro?
I had a contour camera that I used. That was the, I got it to mount on my motorcycle, and before I ever mounted it, I was in my last motorcycle accident, so I didn't catch the footage of that. But I had a waterproof casing for it. It's very similar to, it's more like a barrel mount kind of thing, but it's similar to a GoPro, I guess.
Okay, well, we're glad you're here after the motorcycle accident.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe you'll get a Hero Plus Silver after, or a Hero Silver after Mikey's recommendation here. Well, gentlemen, we've reached the end of our agenda. This is the Apple Insider Podcast. We've got our roaming vagabond, Dan, here. Dan, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter at Daniel Aaron, and I'm on Apple Insider.
Excellent. And Mikey, our contributing editor, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm at Apple Insider and on Twitter at MikeyCampbell81.
Fantastic. Well, we will be back next week where Dan will be able to tell us all about the conflict that he's had, the internal struggle of dealing with the larger 6S Plus device. And Mikey will be back with a thesis on the sides of the Civil War that should be better represented. And I'm your host, Victor Marks. This has been the Apple Insider Podcast. Don't forget, if you want a job done right, you've got to go to the experts. And when it comes to incorporating your business, that means BizFilings. With step-by-step guidance from on-demand experts, incorporating at BizFilings is the next logical step. Head to bizfilings.com/start and get things rolling with a free guide.